Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a realm where reality intertwines with the inexplicable, where the boundaries of reason dissolve into the shadows of uncertainty. Welcome to the political twilight zone. I am your guide to this enigmatic labyrinth, where politics and power take on life of their own. In this dimension, the threads of truth weave a tapestry of intrigue, challenging our perception of the world we thought we knew. In this world, nothing is as it seems, and the truth lies buried beneath layers of deceit. Prepare to venture where reason meets the unexplained, and where the unexplained might just be the ultimate.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining me again for this weekend. I appreciate it, as always. It's Rick Wagner, getting it right. I wish that was harder to do, so much being wrong, but it's not. Everything we see out there is pretty much wrong in some way, it seems like, some days. Anyway, we're on KNZZ 1192.7, and we're also at KGLN 980 and 101.3. We're also on the internet, even as we speak. We're also a podcast that you can pick up from, a lot of places. You can certainly go to our website at rickwagnershow.com. And there's a lot of interesting stuff on there. And I'm not even selling anything. Well, I'm thinking about putting up some links to some of the books that I really like. A couple people ask me about them once in a while, and I should probably put the links up to where you can find them. And, of course, the latest book that I'm waiting for very anxiously is Victor Davis Hanson's new book, The End of Everything, How Wars Descend into Annihilation. Yeah, I thought kind of an upbeat thing, so I ordered that, and I'm waiting for that. It should be coming out pretty soon, hopefully. Hopefully. It's not as much of a downer as it sounds. Anyway, so before I forget, we've been talking about the gun control stuff in Colorado here. And for those of you not in Colorado, it's either already came for you or it's coming. And one of the bills we were talking about just got modified in our state Senate. And that was the one where sensitive places were areas where concealed weapons or really any firearms could not be carried, except, of course, by people designated by the state, apparently, who work for it. A lot of those areas got cut out in the Senate. There's pretty much one guy or two in there that were uncomfortable with it. Now, if we're going to stop any of these bills, we have a lot better chance of working on people in the Senate than in the House. I'm not saying you don't work on the people in the House. I'm just saying we got better. Because there is a larger percentage of imbeciles in the House than in the Senate. And that's not really saying a lot. And what they're going to do is, now, many people are like, oh, good, they took some of these places out. Yeah, they confined them to places we kind of expected. You know, courthouses, state capitol, places like that. You know, of course, all those are super safe. Anyway, so they trimmed it back down, but now it has to go back down to the House because the House, Colorado House representatives have to look at it again because now it's different than the bill they put through. And I was reading that many of the people in the House think they're going to get to add some more sensitive bases back in there. You folks will remember that one of the problems with trying to designate most of your state as a safe space and not being able to carry a weapon in was brought up in New York right after the Bruen decision. Governor Hochul, who, as you can tell, is a genius. First of all, it would be nice to see her face move, but that's not going to happen. And she seems to be a very low IQ individual. But, you know, that's on the scale of Democrat politicians, that puts her about in the middle. Anyway, she tried to designate all sorts of places in New York as sensitive areas, parks, this, that. I mean, I can think of it, you know, places that you might congregate. You know, it was just like so much of it. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that because in our Bruen decision, we said that the laws concerning the restriction of firearms should be confined to historical usage and practice. Historically limiting things such as the carrying of weapons, concealed weapons, and some of the places that they proposed was just not there. Now, the left has hated the Bruen decision more than any decision, I think, since Dobbs, which was the decision that reversed the finding that abortion was a constitutional right. And then, of course, the one before that would have been the one you heard, Citizens United. Remember that? Remember back in the good old days when the left was worried about the Citizens United case because it allowed corporations and so forth to make donations to the political campaigns and so forth because it found that they were, in fact, you know, persons under the broad definition of it. And really, in the law, that's what it is. That's why you create a corporation, or even to some extent an LLC or something like that, is they become their own entity, and they're treated like a person. They can be sued, right, in their name. You can sue Disney, for instance. Always a good idea. You can sue any of these corporations in their own name because they are, in fact, legal entities. So that was the court's finding, was legal entities, if they're legal entities in the United States, they should be able to contribute money to political campaigns. The left was kind of worried about that for a while, and then, of course, the tech people came on board with the left and started pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into campaigns and into what we now colloquially refer to as NGOs, non-government organizations, that just want to help out with the voting. Remember that? Just helping out. Yeah, just here to help. And, of course, Zuckerberg from Facebook was the most prevalent one of that. I think it was about $475 million that he poured into that sort of thing in the 2016 election. So they kind of gave up on that. Citizens United is not that important anymore. Nah, it's not that important. It's not so much as the bread and the butter, but whose side of the bread the butter is found. So once the Democrats thought there was more butter on their side of the bread with this decision, they were okay with it. They weren't offended anymore. Before, they were very high horsey and very offended by, oh, these corporations. And they found out that some big ones would give them a lot of money, and then all of a sudden it was like, never mind. Not to get too far off track. So what can easily happen is with the low, very low IQ people in the House of Representatives, they will probably try tacking on some of these sensitive spaces again because they didn't like them being taken out. We're still being restricted, and you can find a link to this story on my website at rickwagnershow.com. So they'll try and add them back in, even though the purpose that the Senate did was to try and get the thing as narrow as possible, make sure they just took a little bit of your rights, because they thought the Supreme Court might eventually knock it down again if they took too many. Well, the House is probably going to put some back in again, so we need to take a look at that. The fate of some of these other bills is still up in the air. You guys need to get out there and work on them. Some of them about the assault weapons ban, which many of you already know about now. And then the one that I found personally bizarre, the one about if you're not in your vehicle and you have a firearm in your vehicle, you have to lock it into a locked container or put it in your trunk. And we talked about this before, about how is that going to work for someone that goes to the grocery store and has a firearm for their own personal protection in the vehicle. Are they supposed to get out and put it in the trunk every time they go? Well, yeah, that's probably so. Or they would have to put it into a locked, inaccessible case in the car while they're in there, just to make it really weird and creepy. So that is a very troubling one. And it seems to me just one of the landmine types that allows people to get in trouble. You know, you get stopped for something else. Well, not so much stopped because you're in your car. Say you're not in your car and something gets stolen. The firearm gets stolen. Well, how did it get stolen? Was it in a locked and chained container or whatever it is in the vehicle? Was it in the trunk? Well, no. Oh, well, my friend. Ooh. That's going to be a firearm violation. No, you were supposed to keep it safe. And then I would expect that we will start having some legislation that will try and specifically designate anyone who has a, quote, firearms violation from either possessing a gun, which that would be the far one, or receiving a concealed weapons permit. So sometimes these laws out here, even the silly ones like that, that I doubt if they expect people to really, you know, spend a lot of time doing, is to every time they get in and out of their car, take their firearm from where it's secreted inside the vehicle and lock it in the trunk. Also, it can cause a lot of trouble if you're not keeping it in a gun rug or something like that, and you're out sort of, you know, waving your firearm around. You're not really waving it, but you're putting it in your trunk. It makes people nervous. It's a silly idea, but I think it's a landmine. I think it's something they want people to step on when they have something go on in their vehicle, thefts and so forth, and then it gives an opportunity to make you the lawbreaker. We'll be back. All right, everybody, we're back. Don't ever forget, you guys, you have the power. Still, it's trying to get being taken away from you, but you still have it. I have a posting here giving what we were talking about, the level of cognition amongst many of our politicians. This was from, I should have talked about it last week, but I didn't, and I still have it because it's very good. Here is a interesting little factoid. Not a factoid. Years ago, CNN had factoids, and it always bothered me because an oid is like, right? So if you say it's a factoid, it's something like a fact, but it isn't a fact. So these apparently are facts. It says IQ scores in the U.S. have dropped for the first time in nearly 100 years. My. Is tech making us dim? In other words, are all the tech that we use making us dumber? Well, if you look at some of the people using it all the time, you would say yes. But some of the countries that have done these same kind of surveys are kind of finding the same thing. But what's really interesting is that they tried to find out if the Flynn effect was still in play. The Flynn effect was a idea that every generation gets a little smarter. And that's not happening now. And the ages between 18 and 22 saw the biggest drop in IQ tests between 2006 and 2018. Now, in the Flynn effect, you know, IQ scores increase over time because people are supposedly getting smarter. There's some sort of evolutionary component to that. But not now. What do you think is causing it? Yeah, I think it's the fact that people don't learn anything, don't get their minds engaged, and assuming they have the capability to be much more thoughtful and intelligent, it never gets engaged because they're too fixated on their electronic devices. And so that part of the brain, the reasoning part, the thinking part, that you spend sometimes looking out the window and thinking about things, is missing from many of these individuals' lives, especially these 18 to 22-year-olds. They're not used to spending any time without having stimulation by way of their phone, some TV, laptop, whatever. Remember, a lot of these Gen Zs don't even watch TV. Not like you and I would think so. They watch everything on their phone or on their laptop, usually through a streaming service or YouTube, something like that. Not many of them are watching broadcast television by any stretch of the imagination. So they're locked in to a very different environment than you or I. So where do they get their news? Well, they get their news from the same place. What are they watching all the time? Well, they watch a lot of TikTok. And TikTok has news feeds and so forth. And they're getting a lot of news. Now, I don't want to be an alarmist or anything, but most of us know that TikTok is a Chinese company. It's owned by a company in China that is obviously, I mean, come on, obviously controlled by the Chinese government. Everything is controlled by the Chinese government to some extent there. And so they shape the news and shape attitudes, things. If you really see it, I was talking to some people about what's been going on in Gaza. The Chinese have a certain feeling about it, so a lot of the news feeds that seem to be coming across hip-hop, TikTok that people have been telling me, have been very negative towards Israel. If that's all you're watching, and you're already tuned into this 10 seconds of somebody dancing or hitting themselves over the head with an ice cream carton, then this stuff just pops right in your head. So that explains part of it. But the other part I'd really think is that there's just not much reasoning going on. And unless you open up that part of your mind, it doesn't get used. Verbal reasoning, visual problem solving, and numerical series tests all have gone down. Now, some of that may be because we have such a low level of education across the board anymore, and so they don't get any test-taking skills. IQ tests try and not test things like certain types of mathematics that would be more dependent upon what you've taken in school than your reasoning ability. A lot of it is shapes, recognizing patterns, some mathematics, reading comprehension, that kind of stuff. Because obviously if someone's taken calculus and had it beaten into their head and then there's a problem in, say, algebra, they're going to be ahead of the game and they're going to have a little better time. That doesn't mean they're smarter. They just mean that they have some education in that way. And Finland found the same thing. This is what I had here. And in France, the same thing. And well, there you go. Almost 4 IQ points in France. That's interesting. And some of the places that I was a little surprised about, Norway and Denmark, also had discovered some similar findings. I wasn't aware that they were quite so racked into this poor educational system along with the addiction to stimulation from electronic devices. Another one that they thought was interesting, that they said that researchers in Illinois found two-year-olds, this is going back to how people, you know, develop, who cap screen time. Think about this. This you have a two-year-old, and they tried to cap the screen time to 60 minutes and engage in traditional play for at least 15 minutes a day. Those folks had a better executive function in their brain, the prefrontal cortex area, that's executive function, helps you make complex decisions and weigh things out, than people who did not. Let's think about that for a minute. A two-year-old, you have to limit him to keep just 1 hour a day. It says children spend hours on iPads and other gadgets as babysitters, right? This is not developing their brains. There's another little piece in here I thought was interesting. It is thought that playing outside or with traditional toys flood the brain with blood, increasing blood vessels and strengthening the neuron connections, allowing children to more easily gain cognitive development. Staring at electronics, on the other hand, does not stimulate the brain and is believed to thin the brain's cortex, which manages critical thinking and reasoning. It says toddlers in the U.S. spend 2.5 hours of time watching these screens, mobile phones, iPads, video games, or whatever the case may be, on average a day. Toddlers. We're not talking about your nine-year-old. So what they're saying is that that kind of thing doesn't engage the part of the brain, just like we all sort of knew, right? So it's not engaging them at a very early age when all this development takes place. And it doesn't increase the blood flow because the brain thickens in some of these areas as neuron activity increases and more of them are built. So it doesn't do that. I mean, if you're not out actively playing and imagination, this is another thing. Remember when, you know, you could play with you know, your soldiers outside or whatever. You made up games. And you made up things that your toys were doing when you were a small child. They're not doing that now. They're not exercising that portion of their imagination that links to that kind of creativity, which links to thinking about something. That's pretty scary when you think about it. Apparently they're not thinking about it. But it's that reasoning ability, that executive function that is brought about by spending time with your imagination, planning, doing the sorts of stuff that, you know, a regular person does. When you're sitting slack-jawed in front of a computer or a iPad or something like that from the time you're two or younger, maybe, all that time is not directly contributing to your thought process. You're just receiving stuff. You are passive. Passive learning is not good learning. I had an engineering professor tell me that when I was in college, that even he then said he was seeing a difference in the students, that he said, you know, years ago, he said, we'd discuss something and there would be just that, a discussion. He said people would bring things up, I'd get questions, and we'd talk about it. He said now it's much more of just people sitting and staring at me. He says they don't engage as much. They don't want to have a back and forth. They want to just receive some kind of information. And receiving information that way does not make you a better thinker. And not engaging in discussion and that kind of thing does not help your thinking process either. And that's been going on for a while, and it's much worse right now. So now you know. Some people also said that some of the reason that IQ scores are going down in college-age people is because people who really shouldn't be in college are being there now. I mean, everybody's trying to go, whether it makes any sense for them or not. And we see some people, usually politicians, because we see them on TV a lot, that have advanced degrees that you wouldn't let them take your car and go wash it because they have no sense whatsoever and they don't seem to know anything. So it makes it a little hard to see the value of education in that kind of situation. We have had some good news, by the way, is and I was listening to Mike Rowe, you know, the Dirty Jobs guy, and really an interesting fella. They were talking about a story, and I think it was a story in the Wall Street Journal, that there has been more Generation Z folks, right, the Zoomers, turning from college to trades because they're finally waking up to the idea that we really need plumbers, electricians, HVAC guys, and let's not kid ourselves, these have become very complicated fields anymore. Welders, all the different materials, HVAC has gotten very complex, you know, but they can make a lot more money doing that than they can when they get out with their, you know, distributed studies degree or their English degree. There's nothing wrong with going to school, but you really have to weigh it out, and that's not what's happening anymore. So that was very interesting. All right. So we're here in our third segment here. Thanks a lot for joining us again, or sticking with us, as it were. And by the way, hello to all you people working in your garage. I can't tell you how many times over the last 5 or 6 months I've had people talking to me about the show and saying, yeah, I always listen to you in the garage. So I'm kind of proud of that. You know, people are out there working, you know, doing something, and I'm just sort of joining them. But I'm not having to try and figure out how cars work anymore. I used to know. I used to have a pretty good idea. But lately, every time I look under the hood of a newer vehicle, it looks just like something that is purposely sealed up so that you're not supposed to be able to do anything to it. You also have to have a computer hooked up to it to know what's going on. Because there's a couple of things. It's sort of like trying to hook your printer up to your home computer. If it's not working, is it a software problem? Is it a hardware problem? Who thought that you would have to ask that on almost every car problem we have these days? If you would have went back to, say, 1979 and said, you know, I think what's wrong with my car is it's a software problem. First of all, they would not know what you're talking about. And if some of them did, they thought you had a screw loose. And now, of course, it would probably be like a chip loose. But nevertheless, thanks a lot for including me in your day if you're out there. Listen, I know that we had some things up we were talking about with gun control in Colorado and stuff and that. Just please don't forget that. But I wanted to raise a couple other things. The first thing I wanted to say is something I forgot to talk about last week, and that is that Joe Lieberman passed away. And that is really a shame. Joe Lieberman was a gentleman. I didn't agree with about 40% of what he thought, but his delivery and his reasons for things were fairly easy to ascertain. He was, let's say, convivial or collegiate in his way to work with people. I mean, this used to not be a big thing. This used to be something that you would have to say was out of the ordinary. But over the last 30 years especially, that's become unusual. There's very little working together. And let's not kid ourselves that in the past, Democrats, Republicans, Whigs, whatever you want to say, always were trying to undermine each other because it's all about power. And power does that to people. Pretty much all people, eventually. A few are lucky enough not to be touched by that. But it's a very rare bird indeed that doesn't, or isn't, rather. But so he passed away, and I learned something that I did not know, and that is that he was one of the co-founders of the No Labels Party. We're familiar with them, which I always say the No Labels Party is pretty much, you know, No Republicans Party. But nevertheless, he was one of the co-founders of that, and he's done a lot of things in his career, and he was pretty much shunned the last few years by the Democrats because the far left has taken over their party, and he didn't fall in line with it. Plus, he's a huge supporter of the Nation of Israel, and that does not align at all with what's going on in Congress with the Democrats. So he was a bit out in the wilderness, but I think we will all miss someone who tried as best he could to engage with people and convince them of something that he thought, right or wrong, or rather you agreed with it or not. Nevertheless, now going from that to the other extreme is, you know, I like to talk about Jamal Bowman in New York. You know, Jamal Bowman is the fire alarm enthusiast who thought he was opening the door to go outside when he pulled the fire alarm during an important vote in Congress. He's also, as I pointed out before, someone of, I don't think low IQ even really conveys it. It's somewhere below that. Jamal Bowman also is the founder of, as I mentioned before, the Hip Hop Congressional Caucus. Yes. Because he thinks that the hip-hop world needs to bring something to politics. Now, I'm not precisely sure what the hip-hop world entails. I think we know in general, you know, that it's the style of music, but then it gets, it is a lot of variation in there. So I'm not exactly sure what he thought, and I'm not also sure exactly how it translates to political theory, but he, however, managed to ferret it out. I was waiting for the easy listening congressional caucus, but apparently it's not coming along. I'll wait for that with bated breath. But he is in real trouble in New York, which kind of surprises me. He has a congressional primary challenger. Of course, it's a primary where he's at because it's a very Democratic area. But the last I looked, he was losing in the polling by about 15 to 17 points. Which I mention because there is an encouraging sign there that perhaps, just perhaps, in some places, people just won't go that far. That he and Ilhan Omar, who's also in kind of a tight race herself, for a primary up in Minneapolis, they're sort of, you know, maybe encouraging signs. Because the politics of these characters and the quote squad, which I don't like saying, it's, I don't know why. It doesn't, squad, you know, I mean, what does that mean? It's just a group of people who are bounded together by a dislike of America and a shared reverence for low IQs. And so it does seem a little bit encouraging, you know, that think that maybe Jamal Bowman's whatever it is, since I think his political philosophy is probably even hard to categorize, as even as a political philosophy, is maybe a bridge too far for even people in his district. Now, while we're talking about bridges, let's see that transition there. I wanted to bring up just really interesting story. The Daily Mail had this, and I put it up on our website at therickwagnershow.com, that there's a big bridge being built in Panama, and the bridge is between, and you know, I can never, my pronunciation of things is suspect at best, but the old Pan-American Highway stops pretty deeply into Panama, and that's it. And it ends at a place called Yaviza, and it sits on the edge of what is called the Darien Gap, which is a really dense jungle between Panama and Colombia. This is something where tons of these migrants, as the story says, millions of migrants have come through the Darien Gap each year. But it's very dangerous because it's a very jungle-like area. And as we know, sometimes that isn't friendly to people who are camping. And also it's full of wild animals, and obviously you can't go anywhere south of the border. Well, sometimes we're in a big city without having some pretty serious crime and gangs and whatnot. But apparently, there has been a new bridge being built across the river that separates this. Now, this area sort of separates South America from Central America. This river runs through it. It's not easy to get across, and it reminds me a bit of the Rio Grande. And so, what's the deal? Well, they are building it, but no one seems to know who's paying for it. And why do it there? I mean, some people can make the argument that it would help the some of the villages in the area and so forth, but it's a pretty big outlay for something like that. Plus, the bridge, according to some observers, is much larger than would be necessary for something like that. It's quite a large bridge. And many people, and I don't doubt this very much, think China is paying for it. You know, the involvement with China in Central America and Mexico is really troubled. Now, they have been all over Africa for about the last 10 years, trying to control various areas of important mineral extraction, particularly rare earths. They've had their Bridges and Roads Initiative, I like to call it, which is really a sneaky way where they come in, and I believe I've talked about this before, but essentially what they come in to some place that they would like to have a lot of influence in, and they say, look, you know what you need here is a couple of bridges, some highways, maybe we could modernize your airport, what about your port? We can do that, and we'll come in and do that, and then you just pay us back. Well, a lot of these countries just do not have a very sophisticated political system, or it's one that's very susceptible to, should we call it influence? Yeah, let's call it influence. So they get these things built, and then it becomes apparent that it didn't bring that much economic impact, so they're not going to be able to pay it back. And essentially what the Chinese say, you know, that's okay, we just do the best you can, but in the meantime, I think you can make it up to us by letting us have lithium or cobalt or whatever else they're looking for at a very low rate from your country. And we'll just be kind of involved in your thinking on that. It's very insidious. And they've been moving into Central America, Mexico, for a while. Mexico, certainly, for several years. It makes you wonder what happened to Monroe Doctrine. Remember that? How President Monroe felt like that this was kind of our area down there, and we wouldn't tolerate foreign interference, and so on and so forth. Well, some of that fell through with Cuba, but obviously the Sandinistas, some of the government they've had in Guatemala a couple times, all kinds of things like that, it's sort of fallen by the wayside. But it doesn't mean that it's not important. And it is important. It's thought that locking bad people up so they can't do anything more after they've done something very bad actually might help. Yeah. We used to have that idea, but that's sort of also fallen by the wayside. But El Salvador's picked it up and have some pretty good success. Nobody wants about to talk the success about incarceration. I mean, it would be nice if we didn't have to incarcerate people if they just behaved. The problem is that a very small percentage of people, a large amount if you're paying for them in prison, but a small percentage create an enormous amount of crime and cost. This is something whenever we're talking about the amount of tax dollars you spend on prisons and so forth, that kind of gets lost by how much damage, time, law enforcement activity, you name it. Just destruction of property, theft, this and that, that these criminals put into society. And I would hazard a guess, without looking at it recently, that it's substantially more than what we pay to keep them locked up. Although we pay too much for a number of reasons. One of which is we don't seem to be running the prisons. They seem to be running the prisons. Some of you may have known that, what was it, Friday? That some prisoners' lawsuit, I think in New York, was successful for them to be allowed to get out and watch the eclipse. I'm not making that up. They were somehow, some of them were saying that it was somehow related to their religious objectives. I don't know. There have been religions that are sun worshippers, but they didn't necessarily, think the eclipse was a big part of that. They were a little leery of it. Gosh, some of the ancients even had an idea about when the eclipse would occur, which is something that was pretty fascinating if you think about their sophistication in astronomy. But yeah, they won the right to get out and see the eclipse. Now, don't forget, on top of that, you can't just look at the eclipse with your bare eyeball. It's very damaging. Simply because some of the light is blocked out, the visible light, a lot of the harder and higher end electromagnetic radiation in there towards the ultraviolet and so forth is not. And you can stare at it because it's not as bright, but it's just as damaging. So it's dangerous to look at an eclipse. We all know that. We remember in school, you'd be shown how you could make a little slit in a piece of cardboard and then hold a piece of paper up and then have you can watch the sun through the slit of the cardboard and see what it looked like on the paper. I know it's a little low tech, but you can't do that. So we're going to have to provide some way for them to actually watch it. Because you can imagine if we let them go out there and didn't provide them with some sort of, you know, devices to be able to safely watch the eclipse, that they're going to sue them again. So they'll have to buy some eclipse glasses so they can stand out, apparently, in the exercise yard to watch the eclipse. I mean, I'm surprised they're not asking to have a plane fly them someplace where, you know, it's more easy viewing. But when we run our prisons like that, it's difficult to complain about locking people up because we're making it expensive. Now, prisons should reflect a certain amount of humanity. I mean, they should not be a place that is essentially run by other criminals, which some have in the past. They should be safe for each individual in them from damage from other inmates. They should not have substantial abuse heaped upon them by staff or anyone else. And they should have, you know, sufficient nutrients and whatever exercise works to accommodate the human condition. But beyond that, then we start getting into the really expensive stuff. I mean, there is a lot of programmatic stuff in prisons that probably don't do very much good. Also, the access to the courts that is important for inmates to have has been abused over time. So some of these places are just lawsuit machines. And it is a sort of a side hobby for some of these characters. And so it's made it very, very expensive. But even with that, it is unlikely that the expense of keeping some of these career criminals locked up is even close, probably, to the amount of damage and economic damage that they would do to society while they're out. So I don't know when we're going to figure that out. We've been going in the wrong direction, of course. Many of these places have no cash bail, because cash bail affects people who are poor as opposed to people who have a lot of money. Apparently that is the only thing you should consider when we do these kinds of things. Yes, it is true. But the bonds are usually set based on, they used to be anyway, based on the likelihood of the individual showing up for court at an appointed date. Also, and people act like this isn't in there anymore, I made plenty of bond arguments about people's bond, and is their propensity to reoffend while on bond, while they're out. If it looks like they're a danger to the community while they're out, their bond can be higher, allegedly to make them think a lot harder about violating their bond conditions. And almost always one of their bond conditions is to not commit any more crimes while they're on bond. And most states, Colorado included, have sentencing enhancements if you were on probation or you were violating the terms of your bond, and you commit a crime while you're out there. This just seems to like not be anything that's even considered anymore in some of these eastern cities. And some people even say, well, considering whether or not they're going to reoffend again is a violation of their presumption of innocence. Now, we do believe people are presumed to be innocent, and we should. The state should have the burden of proving the guilt beyond reasonable doubt, not the defendant to disprove whatever evidence comes up, although it sometimes ends up that way. The problem with all of this is that, at some extent, we don't believe that 100%, do we? Because if we did, no one would be locked up in pretrial detention. Everybody would be arrested. They'd perhaps be given a nice note, maybe a little calendar to carry with them that says, and when you have the time, please drop by. We're planning on having a trial, some things like that. Make sure you show up. Come by for that. Other than that, hasta la vista. Well, that's not how this works. Now, there is a level of suspicion or probable cause, in the true sense of the word, that the person did commit a crime, and it is high enough that they should be detained so that they do not flee the jurisdiction, or, I still make the argument, commit more crimes, or intimidate witnesses, do whatever else is going on. Otherwise, no one would be in jail unless they were convicted. So we need to just realize that's how the system works. We also need to realize that such a small percentage of folks out there that commit these crimes can be detained after they repeatedly commit felonies for long periods of time, and it has always been shown to reduce criminal activity. That's just the way that goes. You folks out there, just keep doing what you're doing. Try and do a little more of it in terms of keeping everybody on their toes in government.
Hi, folks. Thanks for listening. Listen, if you'd like to listen to more and you want to maybe perhaps have someone else listen to our podcast, you can do so either by going right to our webpage, politicalviking.com, or therickwagnershow.com. Both of them take you there. You can get links right directly to our podcast, or you can hear our podcast on Podbeam, on iTunes, and Spotify, and a couple others. So you can find us. We appreciate it if you do. And if you've heard the show, you want somebody else to hear it, that's a good way to send it to them. Thanks for listening.